Welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D, an Italian-American podcast, and I am your host, Frankie D. And today our show is the Italian America that you may not know. It's unknown facts that we will find throughout the entire United States. And my guest today, who's going to give us those facts, is Mr. Bill Dalcero, who is not only involved in the Italian-American community here in Chicago, but in New York as well. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you for being here. Thank you. And I want you to tell us about your past and all you've been involved with to give the audience a basis of who you are.
Well, fourth generation Italian-American. My great-grandfather came over from Lucca, actually Alto Pascio, which is a city near Lucca, pretty close. And up until, I don't know, my late 20s, I didn't care anything about Italian culture, Italy. I consider myself American, which we all are. But then I got a part-time job at Fra Noi, which is the Italian-American newspaper for Chicago. Now it's kind of like a magazine. That was over 20 years ago. And then I started doing interviews and doing research and visiting Italy. I got more and more into the culture. And then in the late 90s, early 2000s, I became the correspondent editor for the Italic Institute of America, which is based in New York. It's an educational group. I started out as a journalist and an editor for their magazine, Italic Way, and was elected president in 2007, 2008. So I came in when Obama came in, and I left when Obama left, 2016.
What a coincidence.
I served two terms. Hopefully I did a nice job. And actually during our tenure there, we did some good things. We did a film for Chicago, local PBS, called And They Came to Chicago, which is about the history of Italian Americans in Chicago. And it was a dream come true for me because I love trivia. I love finding out facts about Italian Americans. I still work for the Institute part-time as like a senior analyst. And so that I was very excited when you talked about the show because this is kind of like what I like to do is find like these kind of obscure things, which are actually kind of important and interesting parts of American history that Italian Americans have contributed to, which people don't know about.
One other note I want to know, because I think you're just being bashful. Tell us about the book you wrote.
Oh, 2 years ago, I co-wrote a book called The Bebop, Swing, and Bella Musica, The History of Italian Americans in Jazz Music. And again, people would say jazz, that's largely an African-American art form. True, it is. It started in New Orleans, in black neighborhoods, but guess who lived right next to the African-Americans and intermingled with them? Italian-Americans, mostly Sicilian. And they brought a lot of their musical gifts with them from Sicily. There was a lot of commingling and doing that research. Again, that really opened my eyes and just showed you how extensive the Italian experience has been in America, even with music, American music.
And so you have traveled the United States.
One of my hobbies is traveling.
And you have searched out a lot of Italian-American facts that go beyond, I would say, the obvious.
Yeah.
Meaning things in Chicago, things in New York, things in Boston. So let's start off with one of your finds.
Well, let me just explain what I'm doing, like you said. My goal has always been, it was kind of half facetious, but now I've been able to do it. And my job as an educator over the past 20 years is trying to visit all 50 states. I'm up to 40, so I'm getting there.
Wow, that's great. I've actually seen 40 states.
40 states,
okay.
Out of 50, I have 10 more to go.
Okay.
And over the last 10 years, I've kind of made it my mission that before I visit a state, I'll kind of do a little bit of research and say, is there an Italian angle here?
So how do you go about doing that?
Well, thank God for the internet.
Right, but do you just type in?
A lot of reading, though. A lot of reading, a lot of historical stuff.
So it's not easy to find these things you're...
Well, more and more books are being written, but they're more academic and scholarly. In America, so I have to say, it's a visual country. We are into movies and visual stuff. And a lot of the stuff you know about Italians isn't transferred to the visual medium as of yet. But the reading stuff is out there, and I'm an avid reader. And that's why in my recent trip to Alabama, I went and looked out the Italian American Encyclopedia. There is such a book. Looked up A, Alabama, and there's a little writing from somebody, a scholar from that state, talking about the Italian influence in Alabama. I'm like, well, I gotta check some of this out.
What did you find in Alabama?
A lot of interesting things. Okay, the first thing is there's a huge, gigantic statue of Vulcan, the Roman god of fire. It's the largest steel-made statue in the world. It is in Birmingham. It's on a big, huge hill, and it was put together by Giuseppe Moretti and a bunch of Italian artisans back in 1904 for the St. Louis World's Fair. But they brought it to Birmingham because it was sponsored by that city originally. They were showing it off in St. Louis. Came back, put it up on a hill. It's a big, huge tourist magnet, and it's just kind of cool. You go into the middle of the deep south, and you see this big plaque for Giuseppe Moretti and all of his Italian artisan friends who came over and helped him build this great statue that the city of Birmingham is so proud of.
I never heard of that.
There you go. But it's a beautiful statue. And then doing the research also found out that the reason Birmingham became such a big city in the south turn of the century, the steel mills and the iron ore specifically. And they recruited a lot of Italians, specifically Sicilians, to come over and work those mines. And they did, working side by side with blacks, with native Appalachians who were there, poor whites, and they carved out a niche in Alabama.
And yet the stories we hear, the things we've learned, the history, you never hear anything to do with Alabama and Italians.
Not at all. There seems to be some kind of brick wall at the Hudson River. Like all the Italians came to New York and they stayed there. And the other 49 states, nothing. Not true. You can find stories in all 50 states of what Italians have contributed there in various communities too.
So, not that we probably even have enough time for all 40, but have you found something in all 40 states that you visited?
Pretty much. Name a state and I can probably pull a fact out of my head.
That's interesting.
Actually, I can pull one more out of Alabama since we're talking about that. I went and visited the National Civil Rights Museum, and they have a beautiful park there with a gigantic statue of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Not the one in Washington, D.C. we're talking about, but this one was done first in 1986, and it was done by Carlo Ropa, an Italian-American sculptor, who was specifically selected because of his skills.
And that wasn't 1986, wasn't that long ago?
No, 30 years.
32 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow, interesting. Very interesting. Okay. What do we have next?
You want to go A through Z or you just want to...
No, just as you feel it. As you feel it.
As long as we're at A, I went to Washington State 2 summers ago, specifically Spokane, Washington. Did a little research before I went, and you think Washington State, all the way on the West Coast, pretty far. Did Italians get that far? Yes, they did. In fact, if you've heard of a little university called Gonzaga, which was founded by the Jesuits, it's a big basketball powerhouse now.
Very big. That's how, I'll be honest with you, I know Gonzaga because they have a very good basketball team, and they're typically in the NCAA tournament, and they go far. But I know nothing about Gonzaga. I didn't even really even know it was in the state of Washington.
Well, the name Gonzaga, I didn't stop and thought about what that origin was.
I never did until this show.
It's named after, getting back to A, Aloysius, I guess they anglicized it, Gonzaga, who was an Italian saint back in Italy. And why was he known in the university? Because the university was founded by Father Joseph Cataldo in 1890. He had come over with a bunch of Italian Jesuits. They befriended the Native Americans. In fact, he is revered among the Native American people in the West Coast because of how kind he was and how accepting he was of them and helping maintain their culture. There's a statue of him. There's an actual county called Cataldo County. So it's weird. You drive through, like I said, Washington State, parts of Idaho, which is right next door, and you see Cataldo County. And you're like, Cataldo?
So Gonzaga is named after an Italian saint founded by an Italian Jesuit priest.
Correct, Joseph Cataldo.
That is very interesting. I never would have known that it had such an Italian influence.
Very much so.
Very interesting. And that's in Washington. Okay.
Washington State. B, Boston. Of course, everybody knows Boston because of the North End and all that kind of stuff. The Italian influence goes back 150 years, though, to that state. And of course, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but this is new, and I didn't know this was there until I went to my last trip to Boston a couple summers ago. They had a mayor in 1993 elected, the first Italian-American mayor ever, Thomas Menino.
I remember that. Yes, Menino.
He was there until 2013 when he took ill. And I think he ended up dying like a year later, sadly. But he was one of the most popular mayors of Boston. They just erected a statue to him near downtown Boston.
Have they?
Yeah.
Very nice.
That kind of summarizes the Italian influence in Boston.
Absolutely. I don't think every former mayor gets a statue.
No, he was very loved.
That's great.
Very much so.
That's great. And obviously the North End is just a beautiful place, but
very well preserved, right? It's historically important, right? Paul Revere's house is there, but it's got one of the best libraries in Boston, in the United States. just really does remind you of Italy. The small, narrow streets, the cobblestone, all the restaurants and the places to shop, and the smells, everything.
The bookstore.
I
Am Books.
Yes, of course, absolutely.
From our friend Nicola.
Yep.
Yes.
It's a great addition to the neighborhood.
I would assume you've been to many Little Italies as well.
Yep, and that's usually where most people go. But that, see, my focus is not only visiting places like that, obviously, but trying to find the little things on the periphery.
Well, that's what I would ask you. So these remote places, there's not Little Italies per se in Spokane, in Birmingham. There's no Little Italy. You're finding remote Italian-American facts.
Correct.
Which is much more difficult. So I really salute you that you obviously had to take a lot of time and work to just even find these places.
Well, the work's been done by scholars. You just have to go out there and find it and look it up. And like I said, thank God for the internet. Now you can speed up the process.
But even that process is a little more difficult because I thought maybe you just type in Italian-American facts or Italian-American places, Birmingham. It's not that easy.
No. You have to dig into it.
Okay. Next.
Next is actually I'm going on a trip in a couple of weeks. I'm going to call me into your show to go to New York. And we were speaking about New York earlier. But again, I'm going not only beyond the Hudson River, but up the Hudson River, okay?
Which would be upstate New York? Okay.
Because people forget that Italians, yes, New York was a big port of entry, just like New Orleans, like I mentioned earlier, birth of jazz. But upstate New York had a huge Italian presence, too. And I discovered just over the last couple of weeks, almost by accident, that in Saratoga Springs, which is near Cooperstown, right, Baseball Hall of Fame.
Correct.
So Saratoga Springs was known for its racetracks, its spas. And there's a famous cafe, which I didn't know about until a couple of weeks ago, called Cafe Lina, L-E-N-A. And I thought, Lina sounds kind of like an Italian name. Did a little more research and found out, yes, the woman's name was Lina Spencer. That was her maiden name. Her maiden name was, I think, Nagli.
Spencer was her married name.
Her married name.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah, thank you. And her and her husband started this little cafe in 1959. When the idea of coffee house started to pop up.
And what was her main name? I'm sorry.
I think it was not. I have to look it up. I think it's Nagli again. I don't have it.
Okay.
Sorry. Nagli. Sorry. But her and her husband started this little coffee house, kind of like a beatnik place.
I would assume,
right? A little bit of things you could eat, little Italian delicacies. And she gave her start to a little singer you might have heard of called Bob Dylan. We should start out. Yep. And this Cafe Lina is one of the oldest continually operating coffee houses in America, largely because of her. She was like a mother figure. People loved her. She was very welcoming.
So it's still open to this day.
Still open to this
day. You plan to attend it.
I'm going to go.
I should say. And is it, she's not alive anymore?
No, she passed away in 1992.
Would this be run by her children? Do you know?
It's not a foundation. A lot of her followers kind of picked up the slack.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's not a foundation, but they run it. And they hold events there, and obviously they still hire people to come play, folk singers, rock singers.
And this is where Bob Dylan got his start.
Got his start there.
That's very interesting. Very interesting, yes.
And this is just over the last couple of days. Mary Sansone, S-A-N-S-O-N-E, just died. I think she was 102. She was a legendary organizer in the state of New York. People kind of came to her for political advice, jobs, helping out the poor. She was revered. And speaking of Bob Dylan, too, Susie Rotolo, R-O-T-O-L-O, I think that's what you say.
Rotolo.
She was Bob Dylan's first girlfriend, and she inspired a lot of his songs. So some of the songs he sang in Cafe Lina were probably songs about his Italian girlfriend, Susie Rotolo.
That's interesting.
It all
kind
of ties together.
Yes.
So, but who would know that, right?
Exactly. And Mary Sansone was just a political organizer.
Yeah. Housewife turned political organizer.
Who just passed away recently at 102.
102 years old.
Okay. Interesting. What else do we have?
We can talk about Chicago.
I've heard of it.
Heard of it, a little city named Chicago. First thing people think of when you say Chicago is...
I'd rather not say.
We know who he is. It's probably... I think there's another movie coming out about him next year with Tom Hardy, the British actor.
Oh, my.
It doesn't stop. Okay. I won't even say who it is. But when I think of Chicago now, I think of Enrico Tomei.
Enrico Tonti, yes. Who would Enrico Tonti be?
Well, he was an explorer, and he was he worked with and sailed with Robert LaSalle, the Earl of LaSalle, at LaSalle Street. He came with him in 1681 through Illinois for what is now Chicago. They didn't stop here, though, but they kept going down to Illinois. And he is credited with founding a town called Tonti Town in Arkansas. Talk about another off-the-beaten-path fact about Italian-Americans. In fact, there's actually a Tonti Town, Arkansas, but that was named after him by a bunch of Italian immigrants who came there later in the 1890s to honor his presence almost 300 years earlier. I mean, that's, well, 200. That's pretty amazing.
And was he or was he not, I could be wrong on this, was he the first governor of the state of Illinois, or is that just something I'm
off on? No, he was one of the earliest people to see there. Okay. In fact, there's a plaque about with his name on it, the Michigan Avenue Bridge in Chicago. And if you go to Starved Rock National Park in downstate state Illinois, there's also a plaque stating that he came through here with LaSalle.
Enrico Tonti.
Yep. And there's actually a street named after him on the northwest side.
Of Chicago?
Yeah, it's spelled T-O-N-T-Y, though. Oh. Which is not proper. But they probably anglified it.
Exactly.
Really is Tonti. He worked for the French, because Italy was an unified country at the time. But there you go, another example of an Italian slash Italian American who's kind of central to American culture, American history.
And had roots in Chicago as well.
Absolutely.
That we really don't know about. Okay. What else do we have?
Munchkins.
Munchkins.
I'm not talking about Dunkin' Donuts either.
Oh, okay.
I don't even know. Can we use the term munchkin nowadays? Is that politically incorrect?
That I would not know. But that's what they were called back
then.
That's
what they were called back in the day. These would be small. Today we would say little people, right? Actors, short stature. The Munchkin one, of course, is famous because of the Wizard of Oz. And one of them, if you remember the movie itself, there was a whole cute little routine called the Lollipop Guild.
I do remember.
Small people come out and Dorothy arrives and they welcome you to the Lollipop Guild. The Lollipop Guild.
There was quite a few Munchkins.
Oh, yeah.
Movies.
Yeah, they were kind of famous for the movie. They were hired because of their stature.
Exactly.
They wanted little people to represent these people in the Wizard of Oz. And one of them just passed away about a week ago. His name was Jerry Marin, M-A-R-E-N. But again, you look a little deeper, with the obit. His actual name was Gerard Marenghi, born in Boston. We're talking about Boston up here. Italian American. And another famous little
who
person,
just passed away?
Just passed away.
So he had to be...
I think he was 99 years old.
I was going to say pretty darn close to 100 years old. Because that was
the last surviving Wizard of Oz.
The last? Wow, the last Munchkin.
That's why he made the news.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it's the last survivor.
And that's it for the film, as far as the Munchkins are concerned.
Right. There's no surviving Munchkin.
Oh.
And then another famous little person was Billy Barty. Everybody knows those movies from back in the day, the 1930s, 40s, 50s. He was very famous, played little kids, played television shows. His actual name was William John Bertanzetti. Again, both of his parents were Italian. He was Italian-American, changed the name to Billy Barty. That's what he became known for, famous for. But again, you wouldn't think. He was this little person, this American little guy that everybody loved, Italian-American.
Right, right. Very interesting. Tell me about... not the obvious Little Italy's, not the ones that everyone knows about. The others, so not the New York, not the Boston, another Little Italy that we wouldn't be, you know, very knowledgeable about.
Well, I took a trip last year again, went to Cleveland, Ohio, right?
All right.
A city that has been undergoing kind of a renaissance, not just because of LeBron James and basketball.
The Rock and Roll Museum.
Town, they have a Little Italy. It's very small. But
so when you say very small, how small?
I would say 3 or 4 blocks.
3 or 4 blocks one way?
Yeah.
Which sometimes, to be honest, might be more achievable because it's all compact in one spot as opposed to, well, we got to spread out all over a city and, you know, we have a little group over there and a little group over here and there's a block and a half there. So that's not, is this in like downtown Cleveland?
No, I had to rent a car and drive like on the outside. It's in the city.
It's in the actual proper city of Cleveland.
But it's a little, it's about a 25 minute drive.
Okay.
You kind of go out to the periphery most. Not quite a suburb, but it is the city. It's near all the medical facilities. There's a lot of medical schools in Cleveland. And it's a nice little area. They actually have a subway stop right there. When you get off, the first thing you see is this big, huge mural of Italian immigrants on the wall.
Oh, you really?
It says the story of the Italian Americans.
Oh, that's nice.
So it kind of like greets you as you walk there, and then there's a church.
So it says Little Italy. Cleveland, Little Italy. Sure. Okay, and there's a church involved?
And then again, there it is in the middle of the Midwest. Right? You don't think of Italians in the Midwest, but huge presence in the Midwest.
Anything beyond the obvious, the restaurants, the cafes?
Pretty much the same thing.
Okay. What about, I know you have spoken in the past about Providence, Rhode Island.
Very tiny state. You can literally drive through it in 15 minutes.
You could?
Yeah.
Oh, it's that tiny. Okay.
It's small.
Okay. Just to mention now, Frankie D doesn't travel at all. So for all that Bill that's seen the 40 states, I haven't gone anywhere, so I really don't know much about, unfortunately, the United States of America. I have not traveled much. But okay, so Rhode Island, small state. Providence is one of the bigger cities.
It's a large Italian-American population.
I understand that.
You have to, like, juggle the whole statistics. So statistically, by the numbers, even though it's a small state, they were the largest ethnic group there. In fact, the first Italian-American U.S. senator was from Rhode Island, John Pastore. He lived to be about 92, 93 years old. Supposedly a very dynamic speaker. I'm still doing a little bit of research on him. He was so popular in the Senate that LBJ was going to pick him as his running mate in 1964.
Is that right?
That is an absolute fact. And the only thing that prevented it is that previously, the year before, there was a little media splash called the Valachi.
The Valachi.
And this aide told him, maybe not a good idea to put an Italian on your ticket, even though he's VP.
So just the bad timing, the Valachi papers came out. And they thought not to pick him. And he would have been the first Italian-American
vice president. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Wow, that's a shame.
LBJ won.
Absolutely.
But he came from Providence. And Providence does have even though it's a small state, they have a very good little room, too.
Do they?
It's very welcome fellow. They have a chamber of commerce. Again, restaurants. But what they have is something that, if we can jump to San Diego.
I would like to hear about San Diego, because I'm pretty sure most people would not understand what is happening in San Diego, California.
It's amazing. But to finish with Providence.
Yes.
So Providence has a piazza, like you see in Italy.
An actual piazza.
Yeah, with like a view. You can walk out to the piazza like you do in Italy, walk around after you have your coffee, people can mingle and get together.
That's very nice.
That is what San Diego, people out to California now, has done. They just built their second piazza.
So San Diego, I don't know how many years this has taken. Was it like maybe 20 years ago?
Almost.
Almost 20 years ago. What was it like there in the Little Italy?
It was like other Little Italies. It was dying. But there was a huge Italian presence in California, too, not just New York, right? And this gentleman named Marco Lamadri, who you met before, business guy, said, we got to do something about this. Took a whole new approach to Little Italy as we're getting information out about Italian-Americans, and they literally transformed the whole area.
So now it's become not just three blocks of restaurants and cafes.
Oh, it keeps getting bigger.
It's a neighborhood with condo developments and
restaurants, clubs, little cafes, magazine shops. And it's right near the ocean, too, so you kind of feel like you're in Italy. The weather cooperates, and just everything about it is just... It's an amazing tribute to the Italians of California.
And do they run some type of Festa Italiana there?
They do. They run a lot of things, actually. They have a park called Amici Park where they have voce tournaments and people get together and like sporting events. And they do have a Festa Italiana every October.
Which draws what kind of numbers?
At least 100,000 people.
100,000 people.
Over a 3 or 4 day weekend.
That's amazing.
It is. It's incredible.
And you said now they have two piazzas?
They had a Piazza Bassolone, which was a tribute.
John Bassolone,
the famous American World War II hero, right? Italian-American from New Jersey. He was so well-respected.
From Raritan,
yeah.
New Jersey.
Very good. Right?
Yes. Well, I did read a book about John Bassolone, and he was stationed in San Diego. Is that the connection? I think so,
yeah.
And wasn't he one of, like, the most highly decorated soldiers?
He died in Guadalcanal and went back to fight.
He had, if I'm not mistaken, because you know more better than me, but he had served his tour of duty, got out.
Came back and promoted military stuff.
And then re-enlisted.
Sure. Back and re-enlisted.
Which he did not have to do.
Not at all. He was
and
finished.
Which he ultimately
sacrificed
his life.
So that's why they have this piazza there.
That's Miami, wonderful.
With a statue with a bust.
That's wonderful.
And they just finished the Piazza della Famiglia, which is, I haven't visited yet since they completed it. But just as big to kind of, again, evoke, like the event, which does it. The piazza in Italy where people kind of get together in the evening and just kind of in there.
Which is great because I know one thing. A piazza is prime real estate.
Oh, yeah.
And what they're doing is, they're taking this prime real estate, which they could use to make money, and they're devoting it to sitting down, having a cup of coffee, talking, walking around, beauty. That's great. And they have two of these in San Diego.
Yep.
That is amazing. Very nice.
Also amazing, went to Texas a couple years ago.
Texas?
Well, like Texas.
Right? Everything's big in Texas.
Yes, there is. And you've seen boots, right?
Yes.
Those leather cowboy boots. They're called Luca, but I'm like,
The boots are called Luca.
Yeah, Luca boots. I had to look this up. The company, sure enough, since the 1890s, Italian Americans have been making the boots in Texas that many Texans wear, at least in San Antonio.
Your right? typical cowboy boots. Is it L-U-C-C-A or L-U-C-A?
So. I believe it's L-U-C-C-A.
Well, that makes me think that this might have had a connection with people coming from the city of Luca.
Awesome.
Originally. So that's one of the most popular cowboy boots in the state of Texas. That's incredible. Very interesting.
Went to Kentucky last year, Louisville.
Kentucky, Louisville, okay.
There's an obvious connection there. The Muhammad Ali Museum, the famous boxer.
Correct.
His coach, of course,
Angelo Dundee.
They were great friends. But also, people might say this is trivial, but actually I think it's kind of interesting. This is the topic of our show.
Correct.
Everybody knows Colonel Sanders.
Yes,
his
they do.
His white suit.
Yes.
That was designed by an Italian-American tailor.
Oh, my gosh.
See, all these little things that you keep finding, like, man, Italians have really been woven into the fabric of America.
Of America, because Colonel Sanders is about as American as it gets, and the famous suit that they still use to this day in advertising was made by an Italian tailor, which were the best. Real quickly, since we have some more time, tell me about your knowledge of Mount Rushmore.
Ah, a famous American tourist stop, obviously, an icon.
With four American presidents, correct?
You name them off 10.
Okay, George Washington, Teddy Roosevelt,
correct.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and I'm lost. Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln.
Okay, I never really knew that.
And now so, we're finding out more about the main sculptor, or the supervisor of the sculptors. I think Gershom Borglum was the guy who actually supervised the entire project. But Luigi del
Bianco
was the main sculptor there, kind of supervised a lot of the others.
For the whole project?
The entire project.
Do you know more or less how long that took, that project?
It had to be.
It had to be years.
Oh, over a decade.
Over a decade. And how is he coming more to light now that this man, Luigi Del Bianco, had such an influence on this?
His grandson actually has been very active trying to get the word out, wrote a small book about it, and he's been going out to newspapers. And he actually approached the National Park Conservatory, the National Park Service, I guess you call it. And they finally have acknowledged the contribution of Luigi Del Bianco, and they have a little plaque now in Mount Rushmore,
Colorado
States. Here is one of the major carvers of Mount Rushmore.
I wonder why it never was from the beginning.
I don't know. That's a great question.
But kudos to his grandson for pushing this and getting him the recognition he deserved.
I think a lot of it is Italians don't like to toot their own horns a lot. They brag about themselves. They just come in, do the work, try to do the best they can, and just kind of stand back and go, I'm glad I did that. I'm proud of that.
Right.
Without promoting themselves.
Exactly. Yes.
Very kind of humble. And that kind of works to our disadvantage when you want to kind of catalog things and promote them and keep things going for the next generation. The further away you get, if there's nothing to document what's been done, these people get lost in the mists of history.
They do. They do. And I would like to just throw out an idea I had just today when I was thinking about this episode. I feel like the, obviously, Italian-American history is not taught in our schools.
No.
So there's nothing in school. So now you leave it to the family. Well, unfortunately, the core of the family and the family structure is kind of diminishing as well. So this Italian-American history or facts is kind of going by the wayside, and the young people are not learning about it. I would love to get a little group of people, and we come up with maybe one page, both sides, maybe a couple pages, maybe a brochure of what every Italian American should know type of thing. Now, basically for the young, but probably many adults as well.
Sure.
And what I get by this is things that we've discussed today, but I'll be honest with you, even things that myself growing up, it was, I don't want to say mainstream, but it was in my house. It was prevalent in my house.
Right.
Joe DiMaggio, which me and you, Joe D is Joe D. We all know that. Does a 15-year-old know who Joe DiMaggio is? I think not.
We're getting further and further away.
We're getting further and further away. Frank Sinatra. Just those type of people, as well as unknown facts. But just those main things that once upon a time our people were at the tops of many fields and many industries in the United States of America. We're the tops. And our younger generations, they don't know about it.
That's true. And that's why when I'm going into New York, I'm going to fly into LaGuardia. Thank God that airport is named after the great mayor who was actually, they took a poll, I think, in 1999, a bunch of political science professors in the U.S. to vote on the greatest mayor for the last century in America. And Fiorello LaGuardia won.
He
won that poll.
The greatest mayor for 100 years in the United States of America, Fiorello LaGuardia, which is the airport is named after. That would be something else. I'm assuming you're saying I want part of this committee because I really hope you do because your knowledge is vast.
Okay, but only two things.
Yes.
You have to bring orange juice because orange juice, Tropicana orange juice.
Why would I bring Tropicana orange juice, Bill?
Founded by an Italian-American businessman.
An Italian-American, and his name was?
Blanking out.
I'm going to help in this capacity.
Okay.
Anthony Rossi?
Yes. Very good.
Who, if I'm not mistaken, was a Sicilian immigrant.
I believe you're correct.
And he started the Tropicana Orange Juice Company.
And what about Planters Peanuts from Virginia? Amadeo Obici.
With a partner.
Yes.
There was a second gentleman. Two Italians started Planters Peanuts, and an Italian started Tropicana orange juice. And I believe that the orange juice guy developed some type of pasteurization or something.
Some kind of a process.
That obviously changed the scope of the orange juice industry. Wow, those are incredible facts.
Can I give you
yes,
one more?
Yes, please, please.
This gentleman just passed away, I think, last year. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which also has a little bit of it, by the way. McDonald's, of course, you've heard.
Of the McDonald's company, I have heard. I'm aware
of the Big Mac, which everybody loves.
Yes.
The gentleman who invented it was a franchisee named Jim Delagatti. He just passed away a couple years ago.
Who invented the Big Mac.
Big Mac. Came up with the idea for the Big Mac back in Pittsburgh.
That's amazing.
40 years ago.
Probably the most well-known item.
Of America. There you go.
Of America. Wow. That's incredible. And there's another fact that you probably could help me with. The story goes that Buffalo Wings?
Yes, up in, speaking of New York again, upstate New York, Buffalo, New York.
Do you remember the story more or less? Something to do with a couple, an Italian-American couple that owned like a, bar restaurant.
Okay.
And their son came in on a Friday night with his friends and they were very hungry.
Early 1960s.
But they were very Catholic and they wouldn't eat meat on Friday night. It must have been during Lent.
Yeah.
And then something about it was after midnight, and his mother came up with some chicken that was left over or something.
Correct.
And made this item that became known as
Buffalo Wild Wings.
Buffalo Wild Wings.
Buffalo, New York.
From Buffalo, New York.
Teresa,
invented.
I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the last
name. I do not know that name.
The story is correct.
That is truly amazing.
You go to any sports bar in America, from South Dakota to Florida to Nebraska to Wyoming, and people are eating Buffalo Wild Wings. And does anybody stop and think?
Never.
Hey, who invented these?
And Big Macs.
Yeah.
And Planters Peanuts. And Tropicana orange juice. Yeah. Well, Bill, these have been incredible facts. I applaud you for your passion, your desire to search out more on trips and books on the internet. I wish there were more of you.
I'll find something in Alaska too, I guarantee you.
In Alaska.
That's in a couple of years.
That's one of our last states. I hope that we can put together what we discussed. I really would love to. I think it would just take a little bit of time and effort and put together some type of
fact sheet.
Maybe. A fact sheet that can be distributed to every high school Italian class, every club, every college Italian class. I think it would be awesome.
That's a great idea.
I think it would be awesome. Well, let's hope that we can spearhead that. So I thank you so much for doing the show and giving us all this knowledge. And I have a new saying to end our show. It is stay strong, stay sharp, and above all, stay Italian.
Bravo.
Thank you. Until our next show with more facts and figures. Have a great day, everyone.